You're listening to a Castaway Media podcast. Find more great shows at castaway.media or find us on Facebook, facebook.com/castawaypodcasts.
Welcome to the Retro Asylum. Welcome to the Retro Asylum.
Hi guys, this is Steve, aka Press Play on Tape, and you're listening to another episode of the Retro Asylum, the UK's number one award-winning podcast show. So today we're doing another bite-sized episode, and I've got two guests with me. I've got our old host, Matt Wilshire, and our other old host and long-time supporter of the show, Sam Dyer. How's it going, guys?
Evening.
Good.
Hello. Evening.
Yeah, old hack I prefer, something like that.
I was just making sure I got the word old in a lot. Are you feeling old?
Well, haven't you just celebrated your 40th?
Yeah, we won't talk about that.
How was it? How was your 40th, Steve? Good?
It was pretty bad, to be honest. There's photographs of me unconscious on my sister's bathroom floor.
Sweet.
Yeah. A lot of people got me very drunk. I haven't been that drunk since I was 20, and I hope to never, ever be that drunk again.
Not at 60. Keep it on the 20s.
Oh my God. At the end of the night, one of my mates decided it would be a great idea to buy me double absinthe shots.
Ooh.
So yeah, beyond that, about 20 minutes later, there's a video clip of me outside a club telling everyone extremely drunkenly that we're carrying on and talking about some nightclub that we're going to go to. And then after that, there's a picture of me being let out of a taxi to be sick.
Classic.
Yeah, outside of a theatre, and then there's another one outside of a Tesco's. And then, like I say, there's the picture of me unconscious on the bathroom floor. So, all in all, you know, I celebrated in style.
You did. I remember that stuff from my Ibiza days, and I don't want to go there because it was horrific. Oh, horrific.
It was bad, bad, bad. How old are you, Matt?
Yeah, 37. So, take away the VAT, and you've got me from you.
That's a weird way of working it out, but yeah, you're probably right.
Close enough. But yeah, I've got a few years on you yet.
Yeah, but you've still got this to come. You've got this massive hangover looming up ahead of you.
Oh, no, a cup of tea, slice of cake, that'll do me.
Oh, mate, that's my 50th sewed up right there.
I'll be happy with that now.
Sam, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you, chaps. Thank you for inviting me on.
No problem, mate, no problem. Well, us three always tend to seem to get together once in a while, don't we? We've done the Amiga episode and a few other ones. It's like old friends, you know, Christmas is coming. Get together with your old mates.
Cup of tea, slice of cake. Do you like
cup
I just
of
said?
Tea, yeah. Giant hangover. Yeah. So, Sam, have you had your 40th? You're not 40 yet, are you?
No, I'm 34. So I've got a little...
34?
He's got years on all of us. He really has taken the VAT off.
He really has, isn't he?
Yeah.
You're like the proper like grown-up out of the three of us, because aren't you like settled down with children and everything? You've got a new child.
I've got two kids and a wife.
That's two now.
It's quite sensible, I suppose.
That's a proper grown-up. You've got no kids, have you, Matt?
No, not at the moment. But Sam's got other children as well. It comes in the form of three books.
Ah, yes, you have. We'll get to that. So, okay, so let me just explain to the listeners. So the reason we're getting together is, firstly, that we've got a little announcement to make. So Matt, who left the Retro Asylum a while back, he's missed us so much that he's decided he can't live without us, and he's returning to the fold and becoming a host once again. You kind of been like Uncle Travelling Matt from Fraggle Rock, haven't you? Matt, like going off on adventures and sending us postcards. And now you're back.
Yeah, there's no adventures in there, but I've come back. I'm coming back anyway. Hopefully it'll end up that way.
Well, I hope it is, because this is my announcement episode of you being back. There's no turning back from this, Matt.
It all hangs on your shoulders now, does it, Steve?
This is a verbal contract.
If I make a hash of it all, it's all down to you.
Yeah. If you change your mind now, that you'll wake up with like not a horse's head, but like maybe a joystick or something in the pillow next to you.
Lovely. That's weird. That's pure. That's very weird.
Well, we started weird, haven't we, with the VAT jokes and that, so we'll just carry on.
Love it. But yes, I've come back, or I'm coming back. Dean was very kind to me to let me back. I just asked him, and he let me back. And I've been thinking about it for a while, but you know what? You won an award, so why not come back now and glory hunt?
Glory hunting.
Yeah,
I have to have words with Dean, letting you back. just to hold the award.
I think it's of no surprise that's happened. No, in seriousness, though, I did think long and hard about it. It sounds strange, but it's a real tough decision for me because I left for the reason of I thought I couldn't add anything else to this podcast ever because I've always been quite Commodore-centric and Amiga-centric, as everyone is resolutely aware to, and I just thought, you know, I've not got anything else to add to this podcast because that's my experience and that's my knowledge base. I've got nothing else, but it's actually talking to you a little bit, Steve, a very small evil Facebook message, evil in that it's Facebook, that I said to you, I'm kind of bored of gaming, I'm bored of retro gaming, and I have been feeling this for so long now, so long, but it hit me that I'm flogging a dead horse, really, in all honesty, with trying to play games all the time. You said, I feel much the same, but I love reading about it and just like researching other things, and that really, really hit me. It was almost like the epiphany moment of, yeah, I'm barking up the wrong tree, and actually I love retro so much. It's just not actually the gaming that I enjoy so much now, it's the learning and knowing about stuff. So I thought to come back and actually add value would be to push myself out of my comfort zone and learn about different systems, different platforms, different avenues of the retro world. So that's what I want to come back and do. I want to talk about different things. So Dean was very kind, let me back in straight away. And I think the quality of Retro Asylum has come on a lot. And that made my decision even harder because I've got to come back to an even better Retro Asylum. So I think it's going to be tough for me, but I'm really looking forward to it. And just listening to the podcast week in, week out, you know, I usually get six to catch up on. That's how I usually work it. And I've always thought that I just want to be on the podcast. Every time I'm listening to it, I think, oh, I want to be on that. I could talk about that. So I'm back. That's why I'm back. And I'm looking forward to it.
I was right. You've missed us.
I did. That's why it was. Missed you, then you won an award, then it was easy.
Yeah, so that's awesome. So, I mean, in the meantime then, I know you sort of got back into your music a bit, because we've still been chatting on Facebook since you have left. So what have you done in the meantime since you've been gone?
Not a lot, really. It's music is a real love-hate thing for me. In fact, retro's a love-hate as well, that I just fall in love with these things, get really obsessed about it, get really passionate about it, and then I just fall out of love with it. Music's that big thing. Still dabbling in music. I'm hoping to get a bit of music equipment for Christmas. But mainly, I've been all consumed with my work, really. I changed jobs a year ago, moved up to head up a particular function in IT. So I'm heading up a team that I was in, and that's been so difficult. And it's just taken all my mental space away from me. So actually, what have I been doing? Not a huge amount, really. I come home from work, cook tea, and then it's just settled down for bed, really. So there's not been a lot going on, and that's another reason for coming back, really. I want this opportunity to just take my head out of work for a little bit. What I have been doing, though, mainly is, well, I say helping Sam with his book, because I think that's being a bit generous to me, actually. Sam is the master craftsman in this. I take some photos for him and did a bit of the copy with it comes to the Amiga one. So, yeah, been doing the photos for Sam's book, which is an honour and a privilege, because I actually really enjoy the process of taking those photos. So that's what I've been doing, really. Not a huge amount of interest, in fairness, other than the books.
Excellent. Well, we'll come on to Sam's book in a minute. It is curious what you said there, just about, or sort of maybe the conversation we had on Facebook regarding being into retro and sometimes not playing the games. I sort of did the same thing. There would come a point where I was like, I'm not actually enjoying sitting down playing everything all the time. I'm not getting that kick out of it. And it come to me, I dived into some of my old computer and video games magazines just for a show that was coming up, one of our episodes. And I really got back into reading about it and looking at videos instead, and then reading actual books about like history of Nintendo. I'm reading one at the moment that the Drisks put me onto. I think it's called Game Over, and it's about the history of Nintendo. Oh my God, he didn't tell me how long the bleeding book is, though. I swear to God, I've been reading it for 4.5 months and I'm 49% of the way through, and I read quite a lot. It must be about 9,000 pages long. It's ridiculous, but it's fantastic. It's absolutely complete in-depth of like Nintendo and Nintendo coming to America and sort of taking over the whole gaming scene in America and shutting people out and stuff. So it was really interesting. But like you say, like we the conversation we had, that you can still be into your retro without playing the game sometimes.
Yeah, and I found it a little bit strange when you first said that, because I thought, is that really capturing the essence of retro? And actually it is. It really is, because I've dragged out some old magazines. I threw a load of magazines away at one stage. Amiga magazines and Commodore 64 magazines, they all went down the dump, literally went down the dump. And I kind of regret that. I don't regret it because I've got to clear out some crap from my life. But at the same time, I've been reading a few on my iPad and my Kindle now. And I really enjoy that, because you can almost transport yourself back again, can't you, when you're reading those magazines, back to that time. And just feel, try, you try and get that feeling of what you felt at the time when you first read that magazine and you read the reviews and there was a Zap Sizzler or a gold medal. You think, yeah, I remember that game. I love that game. And that's the reason I love it. And just reading other people's opinions on it is really good. Plus the history, like you say, and that, like, from a Nintendo perspective, and all the various books coming out at the moment are really digging deep into the history of retro. And it's really, really good time for it, I think. Really good time for it.
Absolutely. You know, and like, Sam, let me just pull you into the conversation here, because obviously you've been working on books now for the last couple of years. So you're a perfect position to tell us not only about old school books, but actually putting a new one out, a new ones out. So let's first of all catch up with you. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. I was going to jump in a minute ago and sort of say that I'm actually exactly the same. I very rarely play games at all, apart from sort of playing games to take screenshots for books and doing sort of research. I get my nostalgia hit very much from looking at pictures, watching YouTube videos, looking at old copies of Zap, listening to music, really. It's really, for me, the whole culture of retro gaming rather than the actual gaming itself, I think. That's very much where I come from. It sounds like where you guys are too.
I think you're right. It's actually opened up another dimension for me, more than playing games, in yes, you can get as much nostalgia and get that feeling back just as much by reading a book or a magazine, or like you said, Sam, listening to music, listening to the old music from the games. I think it's all encompassing, isn't it?
Mm.
It's good to just immerse yourself in you don't realise there's so much more to it. I mean, I recently went to the Revival, the Winter Warmer, which was a couple of weeks ago, with Dean and Paul and the Drisk and a couple of others. And once again, it's the same thing of immersing yourself in that you know, it's great to sit down and play the games, but even just the sound of it all, the sound of like the arcade playing in the background.
Exactly.
And, you know, magazines being there on the desks to pick up, even the tangibility of just picking up old games and like finding a box of old Mastertronic games under some store, you know, some seller's desk. And I want to ask them, why are they not on top of the desk? Stop putting the Commodore 64 underneath as if they're rubbish, because they're not. Sorry, a little rant there. But even the, you know, the tangibility of just like getting an old Mastertronic game or an Ocean game in this little cardboard box and opening it up and faffing about with the instructions and the smell of it, and I don't know, it's, there's so much more to it than just the actual games themselves. I mean, obviously they're the crucial middle section, the crucial sections of what it's about, but there's so much more to it, you know. And it's really you really can immerse yourself in more than just the games. So it's good that we had that conversation, Matt, because obviously it's helped you make that decision to come back.
It has, and it's helped me understand that it's not just about the games, which is fantastic. So I can stop beating myself up now, thanks to you, Steve. Cheers.
Well, the pressure's on now, mate. You know, we want one show a week out of you. You've got to update the website every day. So that's what Sam used to do.
I'm off now.
See you then.
Ta-da.
This is Nancy at Chase headquarters. We have an emergency here. Carlos, the New York armed robber, has been seen listening to Retro Asylum without leaving a review on iTunes. Over.
Leave it to us, Nancy, baby. Let's go, Mr. Driver.
If you really enjoy the Retro Asylum podcast show, then please leave us a review on iTunes.
Hi, this is Jeff Minter, and you're not listening to one of my sheep. You're listening to Retro Asylum.
So let's talk about Sam's book anyway, because I mean, you guys have worked on this together, haven't you?
We have.
Yeah, I think it's being generous to me, really, Steve. It's Sam's work through and through. Amiga one I had more of an involvement in, but the others have been purely photography, a few little ideas, and chuck things my way just to see what I think of things. But Sam's your master craftsman.
Well, I mean, Let me say a little bit about it, because I received my copy a few days ago. Message Sam to say I've received it. It's absolutely class. I thought the Amiga one was fantastic. I love the Commodore 64 one, and then love the Amiga one, which I thought was like an absolute evolution of the C64. There's so much more content in it. But I swear to God, with this Spectrum one, you've absolutely outdone yourself, mate. I got the one with the polystyrene inserts and the mock Spectrum box and the CDs. And I tell you what, it's just... absolutely stunning is the word. And I'm not just saying that because, you're an old friend of the show and, a supporter of the show and stuff and an ex-host. I'm saying that because it's true. I absolutely blown away when I took this thing out of the box. The box I received through the post was huge. I thought I'd received a console or something. It was that big, the big brown box it came in. I spent a couple of days looking through it. The information's fantastic. And I don't know what you've done with regards to the printing, but the colours... the old Spectrum colours just absolutely pop off the page. They're like the cyan and the magenta. It's just like it's fantastic. It's like it's dazzling is the word I'm looking for.
It really is. I think it's the best looking book. How did you go about getting those colours, Sam? Because they are really, it's the best book out of the three in terms of the looks, just because of those colours. And I know you went to big lengths to make sure they were right.
Yeah, I think that was one of the first things that I wanted to make sure was that the colours, well, I suppose with the Commodore 64, everyone knows it had a bit more of a dull colour palette, so it was quite easy to replicate it in the print. The Amiga was pretty good as well, but with the Spectrum, if you tried to print the colours that, from the Spectrum screen, it just would have looked so flat and muddy. And I was just trying to think of different ways, is there any way that I could get the colours brighter? And I spoke to my printer and he suggested using fluorescent inks. And that's where it all started, really. So I picked, the two most difficult ones, which is the pink and the green, and those two are fluorescent. And I was it was a bit of a risk because I really had no idea how it was going to turn out in the actual book, because you just sort of never do. You have to use my experience and sort of take a bit of a leap of faith. But I think I'm absolutely over the moon how it's turned out. I think it's pretty wacky in places and pretty garish, if you like, but the Spectrum's colour palette was garish, so I think it's pretty true to the original colours.
No, absolutely. It looks absolutely stunning, and it really does set the book alight. You've obviously must have spoken to a lot of Spectrum developers and people in the scene back in the day. So, is there anyone interesting that you spoke to, or anyone that you're like, I can't believe I got them to talk in the book? Or
I suppose my life was made a little bit easier because I'd already done the Commodore 64 and the Amiga books, and there was quite a few developers and graphic artists and journalists that had travelled across the different systems, so it was just a natural thing to ask them if they could contribute towards this book. But then obviously there was the guys that were pretty exclusive to the Spectrum. So people like Steve Pickford, for instance, who was predominantly Spectrum. So the initial way I did it was just to work out which games I wanted to include and then really just go after the people that made them. And that's really how I did it. When I first started the book, the one person or the two people that were really the holy grail, and I think Matt and I talked about this probably about a year ago, was the Stamper Brothers. And, to have them in the book just would have been absolutely amazing. And it was almost a bit like, that'll never happen. No chance. And I think one day I just literally tweeted Tim Stamper, because he turned up on Twitter, and just said, do you fancy contributing towards my Spectrum book? And didn't think he would reply one for 1 minute. And about a day later, he responded and just said, not a problem. And it was absolutely amazing. And I think, I suppose, he obviously trusted what I was doing. He'd obviously looked at previous books and he was reassured that, I could be trusted. And that was absolutely the the pinnacle, I think, to have those guys involved. You know, they are the pinnacle of Spectrum games and art as well on the Spectrum. So yeah, it was brilliant.
Yeah, that was a real coup to get that. When you told me, it was just like, well, you know, that if it didn't have a USP already, that is one of the USPs, because those two don't give interviews. I know they've not given an interview per se in the book, but they've contributed to it. It's almost like that opening up for the right person. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I would have liked them to contribute more, but I think what I've got is great, and they did help sort of sense check the within the book. There's a feature on Ultimate Play the Game, and Tim helped to sort of sense check what we were saying in the book to make sure that, you know, he was happy and it was all factually correct. So that was really, really cool. And, you know, hopefully, you know, you never know, one day in future books, Tim might, or even Chris might, you know, like to contribute again, which would be really, really cool.
Who's the, there's a brilliant opening statement in the first couple of pages. I can't remember now. It's got a pixel art version of his face. And he's basically
Pickford.
Steve Pickford, that's the one. I love his comment about like modern pixel art being rubbish and not actually real pixel art.
That really struck me as well.
Yeah, I thought that was a great forward when I first read that. And I think the point he made, I've actually never really thought about it before. For those who haven't read the foreword, basically what Steve is saying is that there's a lot of sort of modern pixel art out there at the moment, which is probably done in Photoshop, isn't it? It's not done on any hardware. It's literally just coloured squares in Photoshop. It's not based on any sort of old system, if you like. So it's, but people are nostalgic about it because it looks old. But, you know, they've been nostalgic about something which didn't even exist. And I think that, again, the point that Steve's making is that these guys are in Photoshop. They've got about a trillion colours. And on the Spectrum, they had whatever they had, eight colours, whatever it was. And, you know, the craft and the restrictions they had on the Spectrum actually was a benefit to them, because it pushed them to look at things differently, and he really had to craft things. And no, it's an absolutely fantastic foreword. And I used a guy called Craig Stevenson, who is a pixel artist who recreated some Spectrum pixel art throughout the book. So he did the portrait of Stee that you just mentioned. And he also really did a few other pieces. But yeah, hugely talented pixel artist, really, really lovely guy. And I think that adds another sort of layer to the book as well, because, you know, it isn't just a series of screenshots from games that already exist. There's actually new pixel art in there that's been commissioned, especially for the book, which is quite cool. And something which I'm going to sort of try and do much more in books in the future, actually, because I think it's really interesting seeing new pixel art.
Well, one of the things I liked is that you went off and there's a poster that came in my package, which was, from what I remember, was the book that came with the Spectrum. Had this orangey, I don't know what it's called now.
That's like what it is. I couldn't picture off, where that was from. The Horizons Manual.
Horizons Manual,
like,
that was it.
Yeah, it's basic programming. Anyway,
yeah, that's it.
Yeah,
where did you track that down from?
That was, I saw someone tweet about it, a guy called Andy Pryor on Twitter, and he tweeted the image, and I thought, oh, that's cool, and I asked him what it was, or asked him a bit more about it, and he said that it was the image from this basic programming manual, and I just managed to find the artist on Google, the power of the internet, and spoke to his agent and said, could I make some posters of the image if you send me the high-res image? And she said, yeah, not a problem. Obviously, so I sort of paid a fee and, you know, she sent me the high-res file. Simple as that, really.
Must still be an artist if he's got an agent.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, he's, I think the guy, I can't remember his name, but he did quite a lot of Sinclair book covers in the 80s. He was quite sort of renowned for his programming books, and I think he might have done some on the Commodore as well, but he was sort of the go-to guy at that sort of point. Can't remember his name now.
So, I mean, let's first of all talk about Matt, because you've done a lot of hardware photographs for the book.
Yep.
So, I mean, so first of all, Sam, what did you think of Matt's photos? Any good?
Absolutely stunning. Yeah, and I'm not just saying that because he's here. No, I think
I paid you.
again, you know, the point about it not just being a load of screenshots. I think one of the ideas from the start was to include photography of the different systems, but not just. I was very against, you know, getting an iPhone and taking a picture. I wanted it to be really beautiful photography that shows off the product design of the systems. And Matt did some beautiful shots of the Commodore 64 book and on the Amiga. And on the Spectrum book, I think we took it to another level again, because originally we were shooting the Spectrums on a brown floor or something, was it, Matt? Or like,
yeah, it's on the laminate floor downstairs, yeah. in my house, yeah.
That's right. And Matt sent me through some photos, and they were, you know, don't get me wrong, they were lovely, but I just thought that we could just take them to another level. And we talked about shooting them on a black background. And I think when I saw the shots back, I was just like, oh my God, it's so cool. It's just like the sort of the black computer on the black background. It's really moody and atmospheric. I just thought that you absolutely nailed it on those photos, Matt. Yeah, beautiful.
They are good photos. I'm usually not very complimentary of my own work, but they had something about them. And it's definitely the black background, which was your idea, and that comes from your eye as a graphics artist. But it was the lighting that I did on the system as well. It's subtle, and to someone who's got no sort of interest in photography, it just looks like a photo. But to my eye, just having the angles of light coming in and the way they hit the spectrums looks so much better than the beige and the whites of the Amiga. And being a square box, essentially, that the Spectrum is, I didn't expect it to be as photogenic as it was, but actually I think it was the easiest to photograph, the most satisfying, and I think in terms of the output, so timeless. And that goes with the styling of the actual machine as well. It is timeless, absolutely timeless.
Yeah, they're absolutely beautiful, the Spectrums.
It is. I mean, it's absolutely iconic. I mean, I'm a lifelong C64 fan, as you all know, and all the listeners know. But I've actually got a Spectrum wallet with the Spectrum print on it, and I've got a proper bag for going to the expos with a Spectrum on the front of that as well, because it looks fantastic. Black is a great colour for like wallets and bags and everything else. And I've got taken plenty of grief from Dean and Paul Davies for having these things and being a Commodore fan. But it's just an iconic image, and the Spectrum is an iconic computer. Just, you know, it's something else. So where did you get the machines from? Do you already have them? Have you gone on the Facebook groups or eBay, or did the users send you them?
No, Matt, you had a couple, didn't you? I think your brother had one and you had one.
Yeah, I think overall it's been about 50% out of my collection, one of your Spectrums, Sam, and then the rest Sam's kindly sent up in a brown package to my house.
Yeah, I think Andy Godoy, ex-presenter of the show, he actually donated his Plus 3, didn't he, Matt?
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, he very kindly said that he had a spare one. And he was very kindly, donated towards the photo shoot. And I got, there was a Soviet clone version, which I just had to get off eBay because I just didn't know anyone who owned one. So I just got one of these clone machines off eBay, sent from straight from Ukraine or something. but yeah, no, that's all pretty straightforward, really, all the systems, because obviously they're quite readily available, you know, a lot of these systems.
They are, but I tell you what, the thing that took the longest out, and this isn't a moan, Sam, by the way, the thing that took the longest is quite satisfying, actually, is cleaning the bloody things, because any little bit of dust, especially on the black, more so on the black and on the cream machines, any little bit of dust, little bit of dirt, okay, you can touch it in Photoshop, but, you know, you can only Photoshop things so far before they look unnatural. Because you're shining a light across the machines, and because you're taking essentially a macro shot of the machine, which is very close up, very small depth of field, any slight imperfection on them, it shows up. The first Amiga ones I took, and Sam, I remember you didn't even notice this, after I'd finished cleaning it, in between the keys, the keys hadn't dried properly, and you were ready to go to print almost with one of the pictures. And I noticed it, and I said, that, we've got to change that picture because they're wet, essentially, and that would have played with me. If that had gone to print, it would have...
Yeah, I thought it was just a lacquer on the keys or something. But,
but it, the cleaning them is... like I say, it's actually quite satisfying. You get a knife out, you shove a baby wipe in and get it right inside the keys. It's some kind of weird thing I have. OCD, but
it's just Becky fetish.
any computer fetish, but it takes a good half an hour per machine, which doesn't sound a lot, but when you're doing that with a few baby wipes, it's a bit OCD, it has to be said, but it needed to be done.
I should have apologized, actually. I did send you a pretty rough plus two, didn't I, which probably did need a little bit of TLC.
One of them you cleaned up quite well, but there was one particular grunter that comes to me, which did need a lot of cleaning, but again, it was fine, and I quite enjoyed doing it, so yeah, all good.
So I almost hesitate to ask this question, but now that you've both spent some time with the Speccy, you know, what are your thoughts now in comparison to the C64? Is it as good? Is it better? Is it better but different? Any absolute killer games on it that people need to check out?
Well, I've always liked the Spectrum. I don't think I've ever said I don't like it. Obviously, everyone knows that I'm a complete Commodore fanboy, but I was exposed to Spectrum all throughout my childhood through like my best friends. So I've always been aware of the games, and obviously been a fan of gaming, sort of retro gaming in general. I've always taken a keen interest in listening to about the different Spectrum games on podcasts and all that sort of stuff. But I think basically what the book did for me is it reconfirmed what I sort of already knew, I suppose, but that there's, I think, a lot of the games on, if you sort of dig deeper than the obvious ones such as Chase HQ, which it always gets mentioned as, like, you know, a classic, or Chucky Egg or something, it has got some really amazing games and quite deep games and quite technically, you know, sort of impressive games that don't always get mentioned, but like real Speccy fans know about them, if you like. And it's been, for me, it's been great finding out about some of those that I wouldn't have known about before, and it's, yeah, really, really hugely impressive games.
Is there any games that you'd shout out to people and say you've got to go and check that out? Anything?
I'm probably coming purely from a technical and a graphics point of view, but a couple of games, one called Heavy on the Magic, which was a Gargoyle Games by Gargoyle Games, which featured this giant sprite on the screen. I don't know if you guys have seen the game, but it's in the book. And when he moves, you just have to check out the animation on it. It's just incredible. He's got like a cape on, or like a cloak, and when he stops moving, like the fabric sort of keeps moving, sort of like the movement of it, and it's just absolutely amazing. And like the walking animation is just absolutely stunning. Games like Eye of the Mask, don't know if you guys know that one.
Nope, I've heard that.
So that was Sandy White, who did Ant Attack. That was one of his games. Just a crazy 3D game, but just, yeah, like this little guy running through these sort of 3D environments, but just, I suppose it's the 3D that wowed me, I suppose, that I always thought that I knew the Spectrum could do 3D, but just the way it could chuck it around the screen, I just thought was really, really amazing. I mean, there's just, you know, so many to sort of list, really. I mean, games like Jetpack by Ultimate and just things like that. That's, I think it's 16K, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is just, you know, the gameplay on it is amazing. You know, it's just incredible, incredible games that, you know, I think all you need to do is just see past the lack of colour. And if you do that, then behind there, there's bloody amazing games, basically.
I mean, I think I was always a bit of a snob as a kid, because I had the Commodore 64 and did not see any reason. You know, it was just like, mine's the best. My games are the best on my computer. Speccy's rubbish. The Amstrad's weird. And and coming back later on now as like a, as an adult and playing these systems, and even more recently doing the 8-bit wars and 8-bit wars round 2, which I won.
Giving it away.
Ah, it's already out. It's out. Spoilers. If anyone hasn't seen it, I might not have won. Just wind back about 40 seconds and then skip a minute and a half forwards, and then you won't know the results.
It could be a double bluff here.
But yeah, to be honest, I mean, obviously doing the 8-bit wars and doing this podcast and stuff, I've had to go off and play Spectrum games. I've had to. And it's given me a newfound respect. I always just thought all 8-bit games can't do 3D. It's just, you know, they have a go and it's not bad, but it's not brilliant. And then you see these games running on the Spectrum and on the Amstrad, to be fair. The Amstrad can bang out 3D as well. They just wiped the floor with the C64 for the most part. So I've totally got a newfound respect for the Spectrum, and even some of the games that we did in the last 8-bit wars, some of those games, the animation is just better and crisper and more detailed on the Spectrum than it is on the C64, full stop. Even games that I won on, I won on Green Beret.
You might have won on Green Beret. Keep spoiling it for everyone else.
Or I may not have won. This show's not going out till 2017. It's fine. But, you know, the animation on the Spectrum and the detail in the sprites on the Spectrum was better than the Commodore 64. There's just hand up. I can't do anything about that. You know what I mean? I can't argue toss that the C64 is better. It isn't on those fronts. For me, the C64 play better in certain games, but definitely there are absolute gems out there on the Spectrum. And it is an awesome little system. When you think about the fact that it was competing against the C64 with only 48K of RAM, that's really impressive, because it was almost like with one hand tied behind its back.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I totally agree with what you're saying, Steve. The Spectrum was my first actual computer before I jumped ship to the C64. I've got no idea why I did that. There's no defining moment of my life that I thought I must go C64, because all my mates had Spectrums. My brother had a Spectrum as well. So I actually turned the tide a little bit by going to the C64. But this book, because I didn't see any proofs of it beforehand, and, you know, I was in the lucky, enviable position of seeing proofs of the C64 and certainly the Amiga one beforehand, when it dropped on my doorstep, so to speak, it did for me what I'm sure it did for loads of other people, and what I wish Sam could feel with this book as well, is just looking through it, it was, yeah, remember that, oh, brilliant, and it just gave me that instant nostalgia, which the others didn't, because I was a lot closer to them. And I think for me, it's actually reignited my love for the Spectrum a little bit more again, because I was so Commodore centric. Always had a Spectrum emulator. I've got Spectrums in the cupboard and that, but I'd never set one up or play one. This book has helped me really, because I had to play a few games to review them. It was great. I thoroughly enjoyed the experience. So it's great. And yeah, I've got a bit more of a newfound respect for it. And it was almost the underdog to some degree, wasn't it? It's a small British company up against the might of Commodore at the time. Actually, the might of Amstrad, although Amstrad didn't do so well in the computer market as what it did elsewhere in the market. But it was, you know, it's almost that back bedroom thing personified, isn't it? The Spectrum story is exactly that. It's a bunch of British people doing something quintessentially British and actually almost winning. And
in a lot of cases.
Great system.
Yeah. I mean, it's the whole thing from the bedroom to billions story, isn't it? I mean, seriously, without the Spectrum, there would not be. We probably wouldn't be sitting here now. There just would not have been the industry that we have now. You know, like the Stampers going on and doing, you know, the games they did at Rare and all that. Without the Spectrum, you know, all these bedroom coders, it would have been a completely different industry, I think. Mm. Very, very important.
Definitely. Okay, Sam, before I ask you what's next on the horizon, then, I'm just going to have to put this out there. Can we have one to give out?
Of course you can, yes. Yes, we're going to give one away as a prize, are we, Steve?
Yes, can we give one away as a prize?
That would
be awesome.
You can.
It's a special photocopied version, just to save on costs.
Yeah, PDF, just a PDF. No. So can we have can I be really cheeky? Because I've got to say, and I sort of said this before, when I got mine, it was the big fat one in the box with all the bits and pieces. And I forgot to mention, there's a CD in there as well, isn't there, with a load of Spectrum music on it as well.
Yeah.
Which is fabulous.
And let me just say, the Glider Rider remix is stunning. Absolutely stunning.
So,
yeah, just
can we have that version?
That's absolutely fine, Steve. Yeah,
just a big fat one.
Just to give a bit of a shout out to Alistair Brimble though on that one, because it was Alistair who did the remixing of those Spectrum songs. Well, they're not really remixes, are they, Matt? I think that's doing them a bit of an injustice. They're more sort of like remakes.
Reworkings. Yeah. It's like I say, especially that Glider Rider and RoboCop as well. Brilliant.
Yes.
Well, actually, we can have one to send out.
Yes, you can.
As a prize. Yep. Excellent. This is a bit of a mad question. Does it come straight from you or does it come from somewhere else? Because the only reason I'll ask is, can we have it signed by you?
Yes, it does come from me, yeah.
Okay, so just to the listeners there, if you want to win Sam's fantastic book, if you just want to tweet to the Retro Asylum account, which is at Retro Asylum 1, with the hashtag I want Sam Specky book, everyone who tweets him, we'll put all the names in a hat and we'll pull one out and we'll announce it on the next show, and you can win Sam's fantastic book and have a look for yourself. So, thanks for that, Sam.
That's right, yeah.
So Sam, what's next then? So your Specky book's just come out, which is one of the reasons I wanted to get you on while it's just dropped, so we can talk about it. So what's next? I've heard rumblings about a updated C64 book, an extended edition or something?
Yeah. So in the Visual Compendium series, so Spectrum was the third book. What we're going to be doing, one of the things I've always wanted to do was revisit the C64 book, because that was 230 pages in that book. And what happened is the Amiga book, because it was so popular on Kickstarter, it ended up at 420 pages, and the poor C64 book looks a little bit dwarfed in comparison now. And I think I've always wanted to sort of bring it in line with the Amiga book. So the thinking is to do an extra Commodore 64 book, which essentially follows the same theme from the previous book, but it'll include artist interviews, some developer profiles, as you sort of found in the Amiga and Spectrum books. It'll also include some sections on the different magazines like Zap and Commodore User. I've also commissioned some pixel art from a graphic artist called Robin Levy, who did the art for Armalite, and he also did Rough and Tumble on the Amiga, and he did some stuff for System 3 as well, on like Last Ninja 3, I think. So I've commissioned some pixel art from him, and essentially it's going to be a follow-on book that will come with a hard slipcase that, if you're the owner of the first Commodore 64 book, you can literally slot that next to it, and then you've got the complete set in one slipcase. Or we'll do a small run of the two books combined, so it'll be like a extended Commodore 64 compendium, basically. And then after that, the fourth Visual Compendium is going to be on the Nintendo Entertainment System / Famicom.
Nice.
So yeah, this is our first sort of foray into consoles, but still keeping it 8-bit, which I think is great, sort of visually. And yeah, this is obviously a huge subject matter, and Matt and I have already sort of started to speak about photographing. We had a shipment in from Japan of a load of Famicom stuff, like the disk drive and a basic programming keyboard. Got a load of NES games and stuff, so we can start photography. But hugely excited about starting that book. I think it's going to be really, really cool. Lots sort of do on it. But yeah, that's going to be the fourth Visual Compendium.
Fantastic. So, I mean, are you still doing your normal job, Sam, as well? Has this changed your life? Can you now do this properly full time, or are you still working as well?
No, it hasn't changed my life. It's I've got a full time job where I'm a graphic designer, which sort of pays the bills, if you like. Doing these books was always a hobby. It was just something to keep me out of trouble in the evenings, if you like, because I've never been one to sort of sit in front of the telly all night, so I needed something to do. And obviously I did the podcast for a while, Retro Asylum, and just as a different outlet, I suppose, to sort of, and it's something that I'm interested in, with obviously the retro gaming. And it's just sort of grown, really, but it's only ever grown to a certain point, because obviously I've got a family and a full-time job, so, you know, there are times where it just has to take a back seat, essentially. But I've still managed to keep it up. You know, my wife's very supportive of it because I enjoy doing it. So I think it's just sort of carrying on, but at a sort of a slow pace, really.
But I think, I mean, it comes across from a you know, someone who looks at gets the books. It's totally a labour of love. You can see that from the output.
Yeah. I think that's. I'm glad you say that, because that's sort of the way that I want it to sort of come across, and that's the way it feels like it is for me. I think that I wouldn't be doing it just to churn book after book, you know, and that's not why I'm doing it. I'm producing books that I, as a graphic designer, as a fan of the retro gaming culture, would want to read myself. And I'm not interested in putting anything out that's sort of substandard, that feels rushed or anything. So, yeah, I think it's just about taking time and I think enjoying it's the main thing. You know, I hugely enjoy, you know, especially on the Spectrum book, playing games that I'd never played before. I really had to, you know, research and find out loads of stuff, and it was really interesting. And there's going to be systems in the future that I don't know much about that I'm going to have to learn about. So it's forcing me to play new stuff and learn about new things and meet new people and, you know, new experiences, like running a Kickstarter campaign. And it's great. I just really, really enjoy it. And it's just complete polar opposite to my job at work. So it's just a real sort of escape for me in the evenings. And... yeah, just carry on doing it as long as people are still interested in looking at the books and buying them, I suppose.
Well, if you keep putting them out like they are, mate, I'm sure people are going to be interested for a long time to come. It's quite funny, actually. It's you are one step even further than like the likes of me and Matt. You know, we do podcasts and stuff like that because, well, the reason I do podcasts and retro gaming podcasts is because it forces me, it gives me a reason to go and play these things and to read about them and get into it. It gives me an extra push, so to speak. And you're one step further than that. You know, it's immersing yourself even further. You're speaking to the actual people to, you know, to make the stuff. So it's cool.
Yeah, I mean, I am very lucky. I mean, Matt mentioned it earlier, but on the Amiga book, I mean, Matt was an absolute, you know, he was my sort of, well, I think in the book I listed you as a consultant, Matt, but it was really like sort of sense checking stuff with Matt. You know, is this right? Does this is this hitting the right notes? Is it, you know, like a hardcore Amiga fan would like? And I think that's really important as well, to work with people on these books that's not just me, because there's a danger that you put all the games that you want to see in the book.
Yeah.
And I think that's a dangerous trap to fall into, because it needs to be a wider view. And there's so many games out there that had amazing graphics and deserve to be showcased, but they're just not, they just don't get mentioned, if you like.
Fair enough. Okay, so we'll start to round up in a second then, because this bite size is already turning into a mouthful size. So any plans for Christmas? That goes to both of you.
It's the usual for me. I'm actually working all over, not over Christmas Day and that, but I cover out of hours in my job. So, you know, sometimes you get a call middle of the night, the system's gone down, rally the troops. So it's the usual family thing for me. And hopefully nothing work-wise will come in. We've got a reasonably stable environment at the moment. So, yeah, more of the same, really. I do feel a bit more inspired at Christmas to play some games, just old games, because that's what I did at Christmas. I got games for Christmas and I play them. Mainly Amiga games, so I'm looking forward to getting stuck into things like Cannon Fodder. I always play Cannon Fodder at Christmas, but
classic.
For me, Christmas just rounds up the spirit of retro gaming, and I don't, you know, we've mentioned it on podcasts before. I don't think I'm unique in that as well. It's what we did, wasn't it? Because we all got games for Christmas. So yeah, I always look forward to Christmas as well. And like I say, I'm hoping to get a bit of musical equipment for it, so that will suck up my time as well, I'm pretty sure.
How about you, Sam? They're all going to be looking after children now and
nappies.
Yeah,
nappies and
yeah, exactly. All our Sally and I's family are from Minehead, which is a little coastal town in the southwest of England, and we're going to go and stay with Sally's parents. And the best bit about that is that being on the coast, there's an arcade. Well, there's two arcades, and one of them is just
a good one now, isn't there?
Yeah, it's pretty good. They've got a Space Invaders machine as well now, an original in there, and they've got the obligatory Sega Rally, as we've joked about in the past that every single arcade has a Sega Rally. but no, I love going into the arcades, and you know, I mean, even playing on some of the modern machines. Just the it's a real highlight for me, sort of going down to the coast, doing all that. So yeah, do a bit of that, and obviously just normal Christmassy stuff with the family, and try and play a few games, maybe. Yeah, how about you, Steve?
Pretty much the same, to be honest. Sort of like Matt said there, I always associate Christmas with the time that I used to play games on my Commodore 64 and on my Amiga, and now I kind of look forward to doing the same thing. It's like, you know, get that same feeling that Christmas is coming, I'm going to start doing some games. Interestingly, Paul Davies tweeted me tonight saying he's found this thing where you can play arcade games online through something. So you play, I think it's MAME, but you can play with someone else online.
Oh, cool.
Which is really cool. So yeah, I'm going to have a chat to him about that and see if we can get a few of us having a few games. So yeah, you guys for that as well, we could all
definitely
have a game online.
Yeah, very much cool if
you can get, yeah, so I'll find out more about it and give you a shout when we can get going. So yeah, before we round up, has anyone got any shout outs they'd like to do, or any you know, hellos, whatever?
I will Dean, for me, for having me back on the show. It's very nice of him to just let me back with me simply saying I'd like to come back. There was no interview, there was no questionnaire. Let me straight back
yet.
In.
So yes, you haven't had the interview yet.
Yeah, no, but you lot got to stick to his word. He's let me back in, so that's it. No, I'm joking.
Nah, he's a good egg. He's a good egg.
So I'm looking forward to getting involved. Sam, obviously, for taking a leap of faith a couple of years ago with my photography and chucking me loads of systems my way, and out to my wife as well for accepting that I receive stuff through the post, which is stuff I'm going to photograph and probably play on and probably set up downstairs and that sort of stuff. but she respects that. I've got one sort of strange shout out to the manufacturer Benq, BENQ. They make monitors. They've just released a monitor that's compatible with the Amiga. It's a 17-inch monitor. I think they do a 19-inch one. The model number, for you geeks or people who want to have one, it's only 85 quid, is BL702A. It works on the Amiga with a small adapter, which you can get from most Amiga retailers, Amiga kit, that converts RGB to VGA, and it just works. I've got one ready to set up. It's fantastic. So shout out to them for considering the retro community. I'm sure they didn't, but by proxy, they've considered the retro community. So, yeah, that's me.
Tremendous. Sam?
Yeah, I'd just like to mention quickly just a few of the guys who helped out within the Spectrum Foot, really, because it wasn't just all me. There was loads of people that really, really helped load. So, Matt, big shout out to yourself for the photography, as you said. Absolutely amazing, mate. And a guy called Andy Roberts, who's been involved in all of the books so far, but he really is amazing writing, and has unlocked so many contacts for me with his sort of industry contacts. A guy called Paul Morrison, who is writing a book at the moment called They Were Our Gods. Some of you might know him from sort of Facebook. Paul, again, was someone who I bounced a few games around and showed him the games list and sort of sense-checked it, because he's a specky nut. So thank you for your time, Paul. Also, the Drisk as well. The Drisk helped out at the start with which games to feature. And to Alistair Brimble as well for the amazing CD. Yeah, that's about it for me, really. But yes, so many people to mention, and the rest of the Retro Asylum crew. And yourself, Steve?
No worries, thank you very much. Where can people get the book from, Sam, if you don't win the one off this podcast?
they can get it from my website, which is www.bitmapbooks.co.uk.
Excellent. Okay, so we'll start around the show up there. I'll just say a couple of shout-outs. Thanks to you two guys for coming on the show. I wanted to get you on, Sam, because the book's just landed, and I thought it's, you know, ex-host, it was perfect. Just get you back on and talk about it. Gone off and done something really good. That's totally on point for us, you know, Spectrum, retro, whatever. And it's a fabulous book as well. So, you know, I want our listeners to go and have a look at it, because it's, you know, if you're a Spectrum fan, this is an absolute, you know, masterpiece. It's brilliant. thanks to Matt. Matt, for coming back. You don't know what you've let yourself in for, but you're back now and there's no way out. thanks to the rest of the Retro Asylum guys. Paul Dean, Paul Driscoll, Paul Davies, Matt, everyone.
That's two Matts now, isn't there?
There's two Matts, there's two Pauls. Geez. There's only one press play on tape, so that's the main thing.
Thank God.
Winner of round two, 8-bit was... or not,
or not,
if you haven't listened to it yet. Thanks to you guys, thanks to all our listeners and everyone for taking part, for following us, for supporting us, for talking to us on the forums and on Twitter. Please keep listening, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks.
Take care, guys.
Cheers.
This was a Castaway Media production. Find more great podcasts on our network. Visit castaway.media.